Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. We're so excited we're jumping right in. So today we have everything you never knew you wanted to know about badass women.
Woohoo!
Yes.
Let's start out in China.
Okay, that's me, right?
Yeah, I hope so, because I didn't research anybody from China.
All right, I'm going to talk about Qingxi, and I went down this road of lady pirates. It's a good road, and there are quite a number of them, but some of them have a sticky end. Qingxi, though, I just want to tell you right now, died in her sleep as an old lady, and let's take the journey to how that happened.
Wow.
Yeah. Qingxi was born in 1775 and was actually a Cantonese prostitute in the city of Guangzhou, and she was good at it. Apparently, there was one article that basically said she was super good at pillow talk, and so she kind of understood the influence that she could gather information and then wield that influence
Ooh.
Discreetly. And so she branched out from there into piracy, as one does.
Of course.
But that's kind of where it started. She had this opportunity and jumped into, she actually ended up marrying a pirate who was Cheng Yat. And this is from thewayofthepirates.com, by the way, is where I found some of my research here today. So she had a decent sized empire before she met Cheng Yat and married him, and they united their pirate empires.
Aww.
Yeah. So there's a number of stats, but the one I saw most frequently is that at the height of her piratey reign, she had approximately 70,000 pirates aboard 1,200 vessels. That is a lot of pirates, and that is a really big empire, and this is not the cell phone era. There's no connection. These were just people allied to her all over. The really interesting thing to me about her, she was respected and maintained control of this fleet, even as a woman, because she had some really distinct rules. Pirates who gave unsanctioned orders or who refused to follow orders were executed on the spot. So if you did not toe the line, you didn't follow the chain of command, that was it. There was no shenanigans. Stealing from the public fund of captured goods or money, or raiding villages that supported the pirates, also punishable by death.
Wow.
So it was all about the community with her. All captured goods, money, or slaves had to be presented for inspection. The rewards were handed out in a predetermined way. There was structure. And the biggest one was that she absolutely prohibited anyone from having sex with or raping female captives. So the pirates could marry the captives. That's unusual for that time period and for pirates, I think. And once again, punishment was death. Other offenses were punishable by flogging, ironing, quartering, and mutilation. This was almost exclusively performed on deserters. So I don't know, but I think the problem became at the end, her fleet was so big and cumbersome. Her husband died and he had an adopted son, and she romanced adopted son. So carried on. Yeah, I'm hoping that he was an older adopted son at the time she came into the picture. Don't know. Different time.
Different. That's true. Maybe she's trying to solidify her political stance there in the pirate. Yeah. Okay.
So that was 1807. She took complete control. By 1810, it was just so big that her alliance was broken up into six groups, and she elected to take that opportunity to peace out. Her stepson / lover also did the same. And interestingly, the emperor of China at the time offered her the opportunity, like, would you like to stop pillaging and pirating and just walk away? Yes. And same for him. They both received full royal pardons. And he was a pirate hunter after that.
Wow.
She returned to her life in the brothels, but she could afford her own then. So she was the boss. Died in her sleep in 1844 at the age of 69.
Wow, that's a full life.
It is. So Trace, can you match awesome Chinese pirate lady?
I don't know if I can match the awesome Chinese pirate lady. Qingxi made a huge name for herself. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a woman who, we don't know her name, but she was super cool.
Okay.
So in the late 1800s, there was a body found that was believed to be a Viking. They called him, they thought at the time, the Burka Warrior. They assumed he was a man because the body had been found with swords, arrowheads, a spear, and two sacrificed horses, which was pretty common for, you know, your male Viking warrior at the time.
Yeah, somebody important.
Yep.
Big deal guy.
And in addition, in the lap of the skeleton were gaming pieces, which was often an indicator that the warrior was a great strategist. So this was someone who was good at strategy and who was planning battles and who was probably leading battles and things like that. Well, Stockholm University bioarchaeologist Anna Kjellström examined the pelvic bones and mandible and said, I think this is actually a chick. And so then researchers were saying, well, skeletons probably got all mixed up. You know, it's not really a woman. This is just, whoops, we lost some pieces. So then they tested the entire skeleton. And guess what? It was a woman.
Lady. Kudos if that scientist lady who discovered Viking lady was a lady didn't say, ha ha ha,
yes.
It was right.
Yeah, Anna Kjellström, she examined it over and over and over again. And it was, they have articles about this on National Geographic and all sorts of things because it's been quite a controversy. And there are still some people who now they say, well, okay, she was a woman, but she was just buried with this man's stuff because she was well respected.
That seems a bit churlish.
Yeah, I would like to. I know. I would like to see. You can look at bone and tell how much muscle was built up and how strong somebody was and the wear and tear. Mm-hmm. I would like to see some sort of forensics person look at this skeleton and be able to say, well, this person clearly used a sword and clearly was very muscular and, and you know, maybe injuries and things like that. Because let's just not take this away from her.
No.
Let's hear about another woman who didn't really get her due. We're talking about Jocelyn Bell Burnell.
She is a result of listener mail from Lanny Caraway. Thank you very much. She sent me a link about Dame Susan Jocelyn Bell Burnell and is an astrophysicist and has been since the late 60s when she was a student. Bell Burnell was actually a doctoral student in physics at Cambridge University when she first noticed the series of mysterious, highly regular blips in the readout of a radio telescope in 1967. I'm reading this from Smithsonian.com. She, in 67, was starting to see these blips and starting to see things that she thought might indicate a big deal kind of thing. And so she was writing and she went to her advisor and he was skeptical. She's like, eh. She kept studying and she kept watching and investigating and eventually discovered pulsars, which are energetically charged corpses of bygone stars, is how Smithsonian.com
I really like the energetically charged corpses.
Yes. The people at Smithsonian filled with more whimsy than I expect at times. I enjoy them very much. So she finally makes a discovery that she can say, ta-da, and can prove her hypothesis. And that is exciting news. And the scientific community recognized it and awarded her advisor a Nobel Prize in physics in 1974.
Now, we did look into that.
Yeah, because we were super not on board with Mr. Advisor Hewish.
Yeah.
Not down with him, it turns
out.
But
she said that that was pretty common, that your graduate students just didn't get the credit the advisor did. And
yeah, that the Nobel Committee didn't recognize students. They couldn't be awarded. So, Anthony Hewish, we discontinue reviling you. We're sorry. It was an emotional moment.
Yeah, well, and I would like to think that sort of thing has changed. I know when Chaz was in graduate school many moons ago, you know, he authored papers, did all the research and everything. But because he was in, he had a particular advisor. The advisor's name is first on all the papers.
Yes.
But the Nobel Prize, it seems like, I don't know, I hope they aren't still doing that.
Me too. Her discovery was a very big deal thing. In the decades since, physicists have also used pulsars to test Einstein's theory of general relativity and detect gravitational waves. It's something that continues to be a useful thing. And the scientific community jumped on board and has recognized her with the Special Breakthrough Prize in Fundamental Physics has been awarded to Jocelyn Bell Burnell. Do you suppose she's Dr. Jocelyn Bell Burnell?
She probably is, yeah.
It seems extremely likely because she is heavily degreed. She has and has continued to work in the physics and astrophysics community and continues to do big work. She's remained both an educator and a researcher, serving as president of the Royal Astronomical Society, and she's the first woman president of both the Institute of Physics and the Royal Society of Edinburgh. So she continues to work in the community. So she's got $3 million, finally been recognized for her contribution. And what she is doing with that $3 million is funding a scholarship for women, underrepresented groups, and refugees interested in studying physics. My favorite quote of the article, she says, "I feel that I have made my contribution in part because I felt an outsider."
You know, people like her, you hear all their accomplishments and all these things they've done and all these things they're doing. And then I think, wow, today I did laundry.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I gave a kid an ice pack.
Yeah.
Sent home a head bump letter.
Maybe I need to step up my game just a little bit.
Yeah.
Another woman who's going to make you feel like you're just living under a rock is Julie Daubnisi. She was a 17th century French opera singer.
Okay.
But that's not all about, that's just the icing on the very deep cake that is Julie Daubnisi.
Okay.
So she grew up in Versailles and her father worked for the king's secretary of horse. He was a count. The king's secretary was a count.
Did you say he's the secretary of horse?
Secretary of horse, which sounds weird, but that means that he was in charge of keeping all the horses organized. So if you need to send out an army. Julie's father was an excellent swordsman and he was also really good at riding horses. And from the age of 9, she lived at the stables with all these other kids. She studied with the pages. So she was a great swordsman. She could ride horses. She was quite well educated, dancing, courtly manners, drawing the whole nine yards. She was a full package.
Wow, it sounds like it.
Yes. But at the age of 14, the count realized that Julie was quite attractive and took her as his mistress.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then, as was common at the time, the count arranged for her to be married to another man because then it would just look, you know, look better because she's married. And so that's okay.
So he will continue to have her as his mistress.
Yeah, but she's married to someone else. So this other man, his name was Maupin. Pardon my French. That's not my language.
Monsieur Maupin?
Yes.
Oui.
Well, so he arranged a marriage for her to this man named Maupin. After the wedding, he was transferred to the South.
Yeah.
He got a cushy job and sent away. She stayed in Paris, you know, with the count. After a while, Julie got a little tired of the count and she ditched him for a fencing master.
That sounds about right. She sounds like a gal who has had some excitement in life and doesn't want to just sit around being pretty.
Nope, she didn't. So she is dating this fencing master and he accidentally killed a man in a duel. So he's got to go on the run. So Julie chops off her hair, dresses in male clothing, and off they go together. And they're doing exhibitions on the road. They're fencing. People keep saying, "I can't believe you're a man." At one point, apparently, she disrobed to show them, "I am actually a chick." And
wow.
Then continued to do her fighting and everything like that. But after a while, she got a little tired of the fencer, so she started dating a girl.
All right. Yeah.
Her parents, the girl's parents, were not so thrilled, so they stuck girlfriend in a nunnery.
As one's parents might.
Yes.
And, yeah.
So here's Julie. She's doing her thing. She's doing some opera. She's kind of gaining some recognition there. And now her girlfriend is stuck in a nunnery.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. So Julie takes vows as a nun, gets into the nunnery, takes a dead body, dresses it like a nun, puts it in her girlfriend's room, sets the room on fire, and the two of them escape. So now the girlfriend's parents think she's dead.
Oh.
Yeah. So Julie and girlfriend, they're going about the country for a while. A few months later, the girl gets tired of being on the run and she goes home. And her parents are like, "But wait, we thought you were dead." And she says, "Well, you know, I had this thing and what can I do?" So Julie Daubnisi is tried in absentia and she's going to be burned at the stake if anyone can catch her.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, because they weren't.
What was she accused of?
Well, it was because she had burned down this nunnery and pretended to be a nun. People weren't quite so upset about the girlfriend thing, although the being gay or bisexual at this time was really frowned upon. But here's a funny thing. The king at the time, Louis XIV, his brother was gay, openly flagrantly big fluffy hats, super gay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the king couldn't do anything about enforcing these laws because then he would have to also do something about his brother.
Is this like the mobster who got caught on tax stuff? Yeah. This is how they're doing with her too?
Well, no. So remember I said she was kind of doing some opera.
Mm-hmm.
She's quite good. She starts dating this fellow who is picked up by the king's opera.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy says, hey, I've got this girlfriend. She's really good at singing. I will only come on if you take her on. And she needs to be pardoned. And King Louis XIV hears her sing, and she's really great at it, and she's very charismatic. So, okay, you're pardoned, and now you're part of the opera scene.
Wow.
Audiences, just wait. We're not done.
That's not it?
No, that's not it. So audiences loved her androgynous look, but she kind of ran into some problems.
I was wondering about that, if she had maintained the look or if she was back and forth.
She did whatever she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, she could wear pants. She didn't wear pants. She, you know, whatever she wanted. She would get into fights backstage if a guy was bothering one of the other, you know, women who mm-hmm. were actresses. She'd get into fights about that.
Not the hair-pulling kind. Sword-pulling kind.
The sword-pulling kind.
Awesome.
So this is where her downfall kind of happened. King Louis XIV's brother
mm-hmm.
invited Julie to go to a ball with him. Mm-hmm. Royal ball. King's going to be there. All the important people are there. She came as a man. And during the ball, she kissed the most eligible woman there.
Which is somewhat forward even in the French court,
immediately three guys who had been hitting on this woman all night got upset. They all three challenged her to a duel, and Julie's like, right, let's go outside.
Yes.
So they go outside at the king's ball. She kills all three of them. One, two, three, and then goes back inside because she's like, let's keep doing the ball. And yeah, that was a crime during a royal event. It's a crime against the king. It's a really big deal. She has to leave. So she flees.
So even though they voluntarily engaged in the duels,
you don't do that during
a guy's
the
finger
king's
off,
soiree.
But not. Okay.
Yeah, because that's just
bad manners.
Yeah, well,
social conventions.
Yeah, it would be one
there.
Thing if you were having a duel like out in the street over something, mm-hmm. but this is like kind of an offense against the king.
Yeah,
yeah, next level. No dueling at a king's ball.
Okay,
so she flees. Has an affair with a German prince, returns to Paris a year later, reunites with her husband. Remember
original
the guy?
Husband?
Yeah, the guy
Monsieur
who got
Maupin?
Sent away. Yep.
Oui.
They get back together. She sings for the royal court. I guess, you know, you're gone for a little while and everything's forgiven. After a few years, she fell in love with a woman and they had a couple of years together. And then when that woman died, Julie was absolutely crushed. She retired from the opera, joined a convent, and died. And she
as
really
a real nun.
Well, just wait. Yeah, as a real nun.
Wow.
But here's the thing that kills me. So I've told you this entire story.
Yeah.
She was 33 when she died.
What? Wow.
33.
That is a lot of life lived in what must have been only like a decade and a half.
Well, from 14 to 33.
Wow. A little less than two decades.
Killed at least 10 men, they think, in duels, fighting people, running off with the fencer, running off with this guy, running off with the girl.
I wonder what... I honestly can understand the girl's parents, the first girl from the nunnery, because she did not have a great track record relationship-wise, even at that point, which...
Well, yeah, and well, you're a young girl then, you know, what are her chances for getting... Because remember, this is 17th century, you know?
Yeah.
What are her chances for getting married? What are her chances? I mean, she'd be...
I'm super curious about what happened to her.
Soiled. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. It just...
She married the baker.
Maybe.
Seven kids.
She had a lovely life. You know,
you can write to us if you know about this gal. Tell us about her.
The girlfriend. Poor girlfriend.
Yeah. Wow, so that is hard to follow.
Julie Daubnisi. She's just everywhere.
That is, she really was.
She really
That's
was.
Amazing.
I mean, she was good, bad. I don't, you know, she was living her life. I think if she was a man, we probably wouldn't even know about her at all because she'd just be a footnote.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I don't know. She did really cut a swath. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then getting to the end and it's like 33. Wait a minute. I went back and I read all my notes.
Like how many relationships was this and how many countries and wow. That's remarkable.
There we go. We had just to have a little moment. We all had a head shake for Julie.
Yeah.
So if you know of any badass women that we missed, your favorites,
So it's just the first of many Badass Women episodes, I think.
You can find us on brainjunkpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. You can also send us questions or comments at brainjunkpodcast@gmail.com. We love listener mail. Mm-hmm. Catch past episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you can, please like and subscribe.
We're on Facebook and Instagram as Brain Junk Podcast, and you can find us on Twitter as @MyBrainJunk. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know, and I guarantee you will not be bored.